Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty.
And we have a really cool show today. We're going to talk about dogs with drinking problems.
A dog with a drinking problem.
A drinking problem. And this actually is a real live email to info@MartyandLauraShow.com from April Allison. And April says, I just listened to y'all's topic on Cushing's and Addison's disease. We have a show lab that I thought would have had Cushing's, but all the blood work came back normal and he is still drinking a whole lot, peeing a whole lot, to the point where I have to count to 15 seconds. Otherwise, he'll finish the whole bowl. We're on our second vet and we still don't know what's wrong with him. Would it be lupus? We've already ruled out Lyme disease and a whole host of other issues. What other things could he have? So just so y'all know, we're here for you. April, thanks for the great question. Marty, let's talk about dogs with drinking problems.
Sure. So the shorthand for this is usually PUPD, which stands for polyuria, polydipsia, poly meaning much or many, urea meaning urine, dipsia meaning drinking. I went to a lecture about a year and a half ago from a veterinarian in England. It was a really interesting way that they did this presentation, because generally we would go to a meeting and there would be a veterinarian and there would be a group of people in the room and they would feed us dinner and all this stuff. And this time they took us all to movie theaters across the whole United States. This guy was broadcasting to all the veterinary clinics that were in attendance at the movie theaters and was from England. So we got a whole new perspective on this. And he said, this isn't PUPD, this is PDPU. And so forever since then, I have been changed in what I say. So now it's polydipsia, polyuria, because you have to drink before you urinate. You can't urinate before you drink.
Got it.
So I'm like, okay. So PUPD.
We talked a little bit about this in our episode that April mentioned about Cushing's and Addison's disease, but this is just taking it the next deep dive further down. I also would like to mention, for those of you watching us on YouTube, Marty is not lying in bed while she talks to you. She just is sitting on a bed with pillows behind her. It's a really weird, like, visual
distraction.
I'm sorry. So just know. She's not dying. Yeah. She's not in the hospital. She's traveling.
This is trying to make do with a hotel room so that I'm not in the fray of where all the other noise is. So I threw my husband out. I think he's probably watching football somewhere.
There you go. He's at the bar watching football. I've met him.
I'm quite sure I know exactly what he's doing. Yes. But he's a grown up. I don't need to supervise him. It's okay.
Right. It's all good.
So the most common causes of increased water consumption, increased urination, are going to be chronic kidney disease, Cushing's disease, which is also hyperadrenocorticism, and diabetes. Those are the top three in dogs. Now, there's also high calcium, hypercalcemia, in females, pyometra, and then liver disease. Those are the most common things, and along with iatrogenic, meaning that we have caused it with a medication or with some other underlying problem, like there's too much salt in the food or, you know, something along those lines. Then we have less common things, which are going to be Addison's or hypoadrenocorticism. If the dog has had a urethral obstruction and they're trying to clear their body out of the waste products after the obstruction is relieved, an infection in the kidneys, we see a lot of bladder infections, but not a lot of kidney infections. And there's a distinct difference in the prognosis, the treatment, and all the things. And then an acute kidney problem. That's sort of the second list of the most common things. And then there's some really weird ones. There's going to be primary or psychogenic polydipsia, central diabetes insipidus, where the brain says you need to drink more, and really it's the brain that's driving it, not because there's anything physiologically necessary. There can be congenital diabetes insipidus, glucosuria, Fanconi syndrome, where there's too much glucose in the urine, hypokalemia, which is a low potassium, and then primary hyperaldosteronism. So those are the less common things. But psychogenic issues are perhaps underestimated, and then those can lead to medullary washout. And those are tough to chase down. So not all of these things are easy to chase down. And the fact that she's been to a second veterinarian is kind of understandable, but kind of heartbreaking to me that the first veterinarian didn't meet her needs or couldn't meet her needs, or she just felt like they weren't getting to where she needed to be, because these are not easy to figure out. And if you go to another veterinarian, sometimes you end up starting over instead of continuing to work with the veterinarian that was on the right track, but realizing that you go through the most common list of things first. And that's where we did this last program was,
right,
when you hear hoofbeats, you look for horses, you don't look for zebras. So you're always going to look for kidney problems, diabetes, and adrenal problems and calcium first. And if those aren't the answer, then you go to the next set of diagnostic steps. So I feel like you shouldn't give up on this, that there are going to be answers. It's a matter of which diagnostic test is going to give you the answer.
And so the weirdest one, and I've encountered this, I've encountered it to a degree, one of my own dogs, and I've seen it in some other dogs, the just like, I have to drink this water. Like, right. I don't know if that's the psychogenic one you're talking about.
Yeah, it is.
But it's just this like water mania, basically.
Right. And that does become that psychogenic issue. So sometimes these are a little bit tricky. First, you want to make sure that you have the diagnostic tests for the blood work and the urine checked out. So if they haven't done blood and urine, then that's where you need to begin. So you start with a blood test, and that's going to tell you if the dog's diabetic, the glucose is going to be high. If the BUN, creatinine, and the SDMA are high, then that's a kidney problem. Mm-hmm. If the urine is too dilute or there's a bacteria in it, then you're going to be looking for a bladder problem or a kidney problem, kidney infection. So there's definitely some diagnostics that need to be done with urine and blood. If they're just doing blood, then they also need to include urine, because without the urine test, you can't check for how much protein is in the urine. If there's an infection in the kidneys, like I said, that's different than a bladder infection. So all those things need to be checked out. So it's really important that you don't just jump ship after the first set of blood tests and then like, well, there's nothing we can do. So it can take a bit of work to figure these things out. Sometimes it does require doing the test for adrenal gland function, which can be an ACTH stimulation test or a low-dose dexamethasone suppression test. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do any kind of a water deprivation where you say, okay, you don't have any of these things wrong with you, I'm just going to cut your water down. That can be really disastrous to the dog that's running into an early kidney problem. Mm-hmm. You can force them into some advanced kidney disease if you're not careful. So don't just say, all right, dude, I'm cutting your water in half, because that can be really hazardous. So don't do that.
Okay. And so let's walk through some of the weirder ones, right? Like,
sure,
we've gone through all the blood and the urine. We looked at all of those things. What causes this like water mania kind of thing? What makes them be like, I just have to drink every bit of water in front of me?
Sure. Well, let's back up one step here.
Okay.
If they've done the blood work and they know the glucose is normal, they know the BUN, creatinine, and SDMA are normal, and they haven't done the urine, you want to check for the urine-specific gravity, you want to check for bacteria in the urine, and you want to check the protein. And there's a test called the urine protein creatinine ratio that can be run really easily on urine. And most of the time, that sample needs to be collected with either cystocentesis, meaning a needle into the bladder with ultrasound guidance, or a catheter in the bladder if it's a male dog. It's pretty hard to catheterize females. So you want to make sure that you're getting a sample of urine in that technique. Because if you're bringing in a voided sample, or if you're sucking it up off the floor of the exam room, you're not going to get a very accurate result. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we miss that urine protein creatinine ratio step. And I'm now seeing on TV that there's an albumin test that they're starting to do on people. There's a commercial called SOS, and they're trying to tell you that your kidneys may be sending you an SOS message.
Yes.
So, okay. Yeah. So it's a very similar test to what they're now talking about in people. And it's kind of interesting to me that they're just doing this now, because that has been something we've done in veterinary medicine for a really long time. That early amount of too much protein in the urine, if it's above 0.5 with a ratio of protein to creatinine, which allows you to balance a urine sample that's really concentrated or really dilute for how much protein is there, can be a really important first step. And there is actually my own personal dog, the one that I have that I've been showing actively at 12 and a half, actually has too much protein in her urine, and there is nothing on her blood work that would suggest a kidney problem. Absolutely nothing. But the protein creatinine ratio should be less than 0.5, and hers is running 5. is running 10 times what it should be. So I know she has some early kidney disease, but I wouldn't know that unless I was running this test and was really attentive. Because the only change that I've seen, because her urine is still pretty concentrated. So when I contact the specialist and say, well, I'm not quite sure what I should do with this, they say to me, well, her urine's really concentrated. What makes you think that she's drinking too much? Well, she used to get up in the morning and run outside to go potty. Now she gets up in the morning and runs to the water bowl and won't go out to urinate until she has consumed a bunch of water. And so I've been very careful not to restrict her water. But nevertheless, she still very aggressively is drinking water in the morning, which I think is kind of an interesting change. So if you're seeing some of those changes and your vet's kind of poo-pooing it, don't let them say, oh, there's nothing wrong. Make sure that you chase this down. So checking that and making sure that the calcium is on the blood test is another important step, because sometimes the in-house blood tests don't include calcium. And hypercalcemia, high calcium, can be one of the first indicators of certain kinds of cancer, either anal sac cancer, lymph node cancer, or parathyroid gland cancer. So make sure that that whole panel has been done, that you're getting the calcium, you're getting the urine protein creatinine ratio, you're getting all those things, because that's going to get you to the first most common steps. And of course, if it's an intact female dog, you want to be checking her for a pyometra with an ultrasound of her uterus. So don't overlook any of those first steps, okay? If you have knocked the most common things off your list, then you're going to be a little bit more likely to say, okay, what other weird thing could this be? So that's where you're going to look for an acute kidney problem, like maybe leptospirosis is causing an infection. Maybe there's an infection in the kidneys, and unless you're really paying attention, you're not going to pick up that there's a lot of bacteria in the urine and it's not coming from the bladder, that it's actually coming as a kidney infection. And those are really important, because if you restrict water on these dogs that are early in these diseases, you will exacerbate those and they can go into acute kidney failure very quickly, and you can get into big trouble. So you don't just say, well, dude, I need you to stop drinking so much water, so I'm going to take your bowl of water away at 6 o'clock at night, or I'm going to put the lid down on the toilet so you can't go over there. I'm going to strap the toilet closed because some dogs will lift the toilet seat. So you want to be really sure that you're not making a mistake along those lines and that you're working with a veterinarian that's willing to chase this down. Before we had SDMA tests, we used to have to do some renal clearance testing that we usually don't do anymore. So there's definitely changes in how we do diagnostics now over what there was 10 and 15 and 20 years ago. So make sure that you've had all those things done. If you're not sure, have the urine cultured. If there might be bacteria in the urine, get a culture, get a lepto test. Those are typically not tests that are going to be done at your veterinary clinic. Those are going to be requiring tests that go out. So let's do those things as your first step and your second step before you start saying, I think this is just psychogenic or, you know, whatever. Now, are there psychogenic dogs? Yes, there are. And some of them just drink because it's recreational, or they have developed medullary washout. And medullary washout is kind of an interesting disorder. It's when they start to drink too much, and then the electrolytes that are required for the kidney to be able to concentrate the urine are washed out of the medulla of the kidney. And so then they are forced to drink because they are forced to drink, because they don't have the electrolytes in their kidney to allow for that concentration. So there are rare dogs every now and then, maybe one every 2 or 3 years, that I'll put on DDAVP, which is the nose spray or the pill that they give to children that are bedwetters, that allow them to concentrate urine at bedtime. So kids can take this nose spray, and you can use it as a nose spray, or it comes as a tablet you can use in dogs for a very short course, like 4-day course, to see if you can allow that urine to start concentrating again. And once that happens, they come back off the medication and they're normal. So that's one thing you can do. And if you think your dog is just loving to play in the water, you know, if you've ruled out all these really important kidney issues and other metabolic issues, then sometimes something as simple as a drinking bottle can really make a big difference. So I like the Lixit bottles, the ones that have the little metal tip with the ball in the end that like a gerbil make.
Like rabbits,
Gerbils and rabbits and stuff. But they make dog size ones. They make a 64, they make 128. They make these giant size ones. You can get them on Amazon or Chewy or the farm stores or whatever. And those are pretty handy because that slows down the dog's drinking, and that allows them to have water in their crate without spilling it, playing in it, you know, rolling around in it, using it like a swimming pool. Because there are some retrievers that no matter how hard you try, if you put a little bit of water in a bowl, they're pretty sure that they should dive in and go for a couple of laps. So those drinking bottles can be really helpful. You can hang them on your kitchen cupboard. You can hang them in your crate. And if you put some peanut butter or cheese spray or chicken baby or food or something on the tip of it, they go over, they lick it, and they're like, huh, look at me, I can drink this way. They can learn pretty quickly, even as adults, that that's a good way to get a drink. So it's a way to slow them down. It's a way to keep them from playing in their water bowl, but still allowing them to have access to water, especially, for instance, an older dog that you don't want to deprive water of, or a dog that you're traveling with, that just allows it to slow down. There's also those water bowls now you can buy with that float in them, that little piece of plastic float with little holes in it, so that the water level allows a small amount of water on top of it, but it doesn't allow it to splash around in your car if you're driving, or the dog to really dive into the water bowl and splash it all over the
party
floor.
In
so
it.
There's some, yeah. There are definitely some things that you can do, but you never want to do any of this until you have absolutely positively done a complete workup with your dog, with your veterinarian.
Okay.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Talk a little bit about some of these, not just the psychogenic, we touched that one, but talk to us a little bit about some of these other more random ones. I think lepto is one, You know, we've kind of touched on this in some of our previous episodes, but just saw a lepto case here in town at the clinic locally. Leptospirosis, because there has been advice over the course of the years that lepto maybe wasn't as important a vaccine and blah, blah, blah. That there are dogs that are more susceptible to leptospirosis infection. So you want to walk through that and how that could be something that the dog is encountering, maybe even if it's been vaccinated because of the number of serovars in lepto.
Right. So lepto has definitely been classified as a re-emerging disease in dogs, and it does have zoonotic potential. So people can get lepto as well. And I've actually had one client, not when she was a client of mine, but prior to that, that ended up with lepto herself. So we take leptospirosis pretty seriously. And yes, historically, leptospirosis has gotten kind of a bad rap as a vaccine, because if we were going to see an allergic reaction to a vaccine, it was most frequently lepto. But over the last 10 years, the vaccine companies have really cleaned up the vaccine, so it's a lot less allergenic, so a lot less likely for dogs to develop an allergic reaction like facial swelling and itching after the vaccination. And now many of the organizations, including the American Animal Hospital Association and AVMA, are now suggesting, ACVIM are now suggesting that this is a core vaccine, meaning that all dogs should get it. It's like parvo, it's like distemper, all dogs should be vaccinated for it, as opposed to a lifestyle vaccine like Lyme disease. If you live in Wisconsin, you want to vaccinate for Lyme disease. If you live in Lyme, Connecticut, you want to vaccinate for Lyme disease. If you live in Utah where it's drier, it may not be a core vaccine depending on where you live and what your environment is. And there's a really great map on the CAPC Vet website. It's capcvet.org that you can go to, and we'll drill down to your zip code where diseases like heartworm and lepto are found. So if you're curious about what's going on in your community, your veterinarian and you can sit down and go through this website and take a look and say, this is appropriate for my dog to be vaccinated against. And yes, we definitely see lepto in dogs. We diagnose it fairly often in our practice, several cases a year, and it can be a fatal disease fairly quickly if it's not diagnosed, treated, and you're lucky enough to get it treated in time. So it'll cause high kidney values, high liver enzymes, of course, increased water consumption, increased urination. And there are two tests for lepto. There's the blood test that checks for the antibodies, which take 3 weeks or more to develop if the dog's exposed. And there's a PCR test, which is on the urine, that actually looks for the bacterial DNA. So if you have a dog that's really recently infected, you want to do both tests because it's a much more effective tool than either one alone. So at our state lab and other labs as well, it's less expensive to send them both together than it is to send one and then send the other. So we want to do that. And yes, we can only vaccinate for four of the serovars that we have in dogs. Mm-hmm. So that is a little frustrating because things like Autumnalis and Bratislava are probably pretty common serovars in dogs, but we don't have a vaccine for it. We have Icterohemorrhagica, Grippotyphosa, Canicola, and Pomona. So those are the four strains that we can vaccinate for. So if you've historically said, no, I'm not going to vaccinate for lepto, you may want to reconsider that and have another conversation with your veterinary professional the next time you go in. Lepto can be given separately or as part of the distemper parvo combination. So if you're concerned about vaccinating too many antigens at one time, then you split it up and give the lepto as a separate vaccination. And although it hasn't been recommended in general, I think there's enough seasonality to it to say if you're going to limit when you vaccinate for lepto, I would do it in the early spring just before the water starts to run, you know, like March, do it that time of year, because we do have concerns that the effectiveness of the vaccine may not last a full 12 months.
Right.
So if you're, you know, like where we are, it's pretty snowy right now, so we don't have a lot of standing water. But come March and April, it's going to be puddles and rivers and all kinds of stuff running through
the water. Whereas if you're here in Oregon, there's nothing but standing water.
Right, right. So, you know, again, it depends on where you live, what your environment is, what your dog's lifestyle is. But we used to say leptospirosis was a disease of the large breed hunting dog that was in mm-hmm. water and things like that. But now it's not. It's in New York City and the rats. We have mice where we are. So those are all real concerns. So if you haven't vaccinated, you should consider it. I am taking care of currently one whippet that is 5.5 years out from his lepto diagnosis. We diagnosed him on Halloween night 5.5 years ago. And his previous veterinarian had said, yeah, he's in kidney failure. He's going to die. That was the diagnosis. I said, well, how about if we chase this down just a little bit more? And it turned out it was lepto. And he's got a very devoted family that has worked very, very hard to keep him happy and healthy. And he's the only fat whippet that you'll ever see because he eats KD by hills, and he has managed to become a little bit, not fat, but a little bit fat for a whippet. So you can have success with these guys if you're willing to chase it down and treat it correctly. And they have been over the top in their ability to manage this dog. So I'm pretty impressed that they still have this kiddo going at this many years out, because he does have chronic kidney injury. So the other thing that's really important with kidneys is that there is a website, the IRIS website. It's the International Renal Information Service, I think is what it's called, IRIS. If you type in IRIS like the flower and kidney dogs and cats, it will bring up a whole website, and it's got lots of information about the diagnostics, the treatment, the different stages of the kidney failure, what medications they should be on for managing their protein loss through their kidneys, like telmisartan and enalapril and benazepril and fluids and diet and just a whole array of things. So if you do have a dog that's been diagnosed with kidney disease and you want more scientific information, and don't join a Facebook group for dogs and kidney failure, because that's going to make you nuts. But if you really want some science behind it, they have some really great information on the IRIS website, and you can understand it. You can read it. There are summaries. There's very extensive things if you want to read in depth. There's summaries if you want to just look at the quick reference chart and see what stage of kidney failure your dog or cat may be in, and then what the steps are that you can do. Because diet and medications to control blood pressure are absolutely huge in how to manage these patients.
And this is not necessarily kidney failure, kidney disease, kidney infection, any of these things, not necessarily an issue just for older dogs. Like, you can see particularly lepto infections in very young dogs.
Yes. In fact, very often young dogs, because their immune system isn't really competent yet. And under 12 weeks, a lot of veterinarians aren't vaccinating for it. So yes, you can see it. The client of mine that had leptospirosis had a litter of puppies that got lepto. Her previous veterinarian, before she ever came to us, had diagnosed her puppies with lepto. She came in with the litter of puppies and put them on the exam table. And she said, well, how are you doing? And she said, well, the puppies are better, but I'm not feeling very well. And the veterinarian looked across the table at her and said, you got lepto from the puppies. Get out of here. Go see your physician. So it truly does happen in people, and it can happen in any age dog. So don't assume that kidney failure is only related to older dogs. We can see hypercalcemia causing kidney failure. We can see a lot of different disorders that can initiate this. So be sure that you are following all the recommendations that your veterinary is recommending for diagnostic testing and for treatment. So don't overlook any of those. There's also kind of an interesting story about the kidney diets. And a lot of people are, reluctant to feed a prescription diet, either the cost or they don't believe that they make a difference. But a number of years ago, University of Minnesota did a really interesting study. And Minnesota, at the time that Carl Osborn was alive and still to this day with Jody Lulick there, is sort of the epicenter of all things kidney and bladder in dogs and cats. Like, they are the mecca for this stuff. And they did a study that they had a group of dogs with naturally occurring kidney failure, not dogs that they induced it in experimentally, but these were real-life client dogs that walked through their veterinary hospital doors. And they said, okay, we're going to divide these dogs into two categories. One category, they're going to eat regular dog food. So they took all the food they were eating, put it together in a tumbler, sent it out the door with this mixed mash of different kinds of over-the-counter foods, and put the other category onto KD, the Hill's prescription diet for kidney failure. And they were going to run the study for 2 years. At the end of 1 year, they discontinued the study because they considered it to be immoral and illegal, almost, not quite illegal, but immoral and unethical to continue the study because so many more of the dogs on the kidney diet were alive than the dogs on the over-the-counter diet were alive. So if you're trying to do a homemade diet, you're trying to do one of the raw food diets, if you're trying to do any of those, it's probably not the best choice. The raw meat diets tend to be very, very, very high in protein, phosphorus, and other things that aren't good for their kidneys. So if your vet says you should be on a prescription kidney diet, do this with your head, shake it up and down and say, yes, yes, I will. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Send it home with me. It comes canned. It comes dry. Hills makes one. Royal Canin makes one. And Purina makes one. And they are very effective diets in maintaining your dog's longevity and health. So please don't overlook some of these important steps that you can do. You got to feed them anyway. And the cost of prescription food is a tiny bit more than the cost of regular food. So do the best you can for your pets with these kind of conditions. Obviously, if they're diabetic, you're going to treat with insulin. Obviously, if they have hypercalcemia, you're going to chase that down. Obviously, if those are the other issues, that's not your primary problem. If it's Cushing's disease, you're going to treat for Cushing's. But if you have kidney disease, be sure you're really following those directions.
Okay. All right. Marty, thank you very much. April. Hi, April. Thank you for asking. Anybody else out there has a wild question? A zebra that needs to be roped and corralled, just give us a holler. Marty's kind of a zebra wrangler.
Oh my gosh. I've never been called that.
It's my new thing. Marty Greer, the zebra wrangler. 100. Hundy P, man. Hundy P. All right. Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.